Push the right button. Here we are. Hi, everyone. Nice to see you. I was just saying before I hit record, I do love these intimate calls that we seem to have in the morning. The afternoon calls, but a bit bigger. I think the time suits more people. But yeah, I'm loving the morning. Okay, we're at module 7. Just going to share my screen. Please know the chat is open. This will be quite an interactive little session. What we're talking about is our self-doubt as coaches. Always everyone's favorite topic. And it's an interesting one. I think this tends to be the module where things start falling into place for a lot of folks, because you start putting things together through your own lens, through your own experience. And as we move into the remaining modules, we're really building on self-belief and this kind of expanded model of self-belief that includes all of the healthy self resources. So I'm hoping this is going to be super helpful to you. What we're going to talk about today is the aims of this module. We're going to split this over the 2 weeks. So we're looking at self-doubt in your business this week, and then how self-doubt might show up in your client practice next week. We're going to do some coaching, and I'll make some suggestions, invitations for you to take, how to take this stuff away to play with in your practice pods. Yeah. So this is the thing that I believe. Self-doubt is the work of our work, right? I'm really interested in how self-doubt shows up for us as practitioners. I'll just stop that because that's a bit dramatic to have that right in front of you. How our own self-doubt shows up in our business, in our client work. This is sometimes quite subtle, and sometimes it's like blindingly obvious, and we're all kind of a bit uncomfortably aware of where we might be holding ourselves back and managing or attempting to manage risks and all of that jazz. But what I would say is that when we can do the brave work, I think it's hugely brave work, to look at our own experience of self-doubt and to kind of see, get curious about where that's showing up, start playing with these tools that we're all learning, and really notice the ways that we can actually support ourselves. There's a couple of things that tend to happen. One is you grow, like as a human, your business grows, you get more clients, all of that jazz. But I don't think that's magic. I don't think you're manifesting it. I think what's actually happening is that you're willing to take risks, which as an entrepreneur, as someone who is growing their own business and whatever, however that looks for you, it's a full house of psychological risk, right? So the 7 big risks are all present if you are running a business. And I'll often, you know, say to people, look, did you notice that this shit was on the brochure? Because when I signed up to be a coach, I thought I was just going to get to help people. And I was like, sweet, that's going to make me feel so good about myself. And then you find you have to like go through the process of clarifying how you help people, and then the marketing and the selling and all the discomfort that comes with the disappointments, and then the discomfort that comes with growing and getting bigger. And, you know, maybe you end up hiring people, and all of that, right, it's just a full house of risk. And it doesn't really matter, I don't think, kind of where you are in growing your practice and developing that, there's always going to be something. Like I've found, and I've been doing this for 12 years now, there's no end point to the growth opportunities, which is, you know, kind of a pain in the ass, to be honest. I'm ready for a lot of that to be over. But what tends to happen is that our relationship with our own self-doubt changes and evolves, and it becomes less like it is the thing that is holding you back, right? It just has less of a less of a crunchy feeling, the more you're willing to play with it. Yeah. So I can remember when I first, because the way I got into coaching was I was a blogger, an old school blogger about 16 or 17 years ago. And I was anonymous because that was what you did back then, because employers could fire you if you talked about them in anything other than praising terms. And then I was developing my coaching practice as I trained as a coach, and I thought, I can't have an anonymous blog. I actually want people to find me now. And the self-doubt that hit around claiming the URL that was my name felt enormous. Some of you may have been through something similar, and it feels like this huge step, right? Suddenly, people are going to be able to search and find me and see what I'm doing and then have judgments and ideas about that and opinions about that. They might even share those with me, God forbid. So that kind of held me back for a couple of months. Like, it was a real like stressor. And now I just think, oh, okay, right. I kind of get why that is. But just how kind of almost neutral I feel about that now, I just think it doesn't even matter, right? It's not even a thing I spent any time on. But at the time, that was the main source of self-doubt. All to say, it doesn't actually matter what the thing is that's holding you back. It will change and grow as you move through it. But if I had stayed with an anonymous blog, an anonymous website, I would not have got over that. I would not have moved through it and realized, oh, there is that risk is absolutely true, that people are going to search and find me and have opinions and judgments, and sometimes they're going to share them with me. I couldn't get to the place where I'm like, oh, some people have opinions that are different to me. Some people think coaching is dumb. Some people are like, why are you leaving this management consulting job to be a freaking life coach? Are you going through some kind of breakdown? Right, literally. And this coincided with when I got sober. So a lot of people that I worked with had this view of me, and then suddenly that was changing and they couldn't compute. So all to say, if I had stayed in that place of doubt, I can't do this, I have to hold myself back, I would never have got to the next stage, which was, oh, it's okay that people have opinions about me. I can actually be with that. I'm all right with that. You know, if my ex-colleague thinks coaching's dumb, I'm good with that, because I never want to see them again. You know, it's something I can actually be with. But remember, our self-doubt is always going to be about protecting us based on experiences we'd had in the past. Right. So I've had a lot of like experiences of bullying as a teenager, experiences of being judged and criticized in my family. So naturally, as soon as I'm going, hi, it's me, and I'm doing this thing, and I don't really have the answers, and I don't know how this is going to go, my self-doubt comes up and says, whoa, big risk. Let's stop you right there, lady. So it all makes sense. But what can happen is we make decisions based on that perception. We hold ourselves back. If we see self-doubt as the work of our work, which I believe it is, you actually get to move through it and see what's on the other side, which is usually a little more self-doubt, but it's a different flavor, right? It's a different growth opportunity. But as you do this more and more, you actually start to build some deep resilience and courage. And you find that self-doubt is actually has less of a hold, however it might be showing up. So all to say that this is where we start to kind of get the rubber hitting the road, right? Is that at some point we go, all right, I understand where my self-doubt is coming from. I can kind of make those connections. And I know that to move through that, I need to experiment to get some new data in. So now I've got to do the brave thing. I've got to actually do something different, right? So that's what this module is all about. How do you move out of, I understand this in theory, to actually doing the doing, doing something different and trying the brave thing. Yeah. So let's just look at this for a sec. The aims for this module, where is self-doubt showing up in your coaching business? We're going to look at this today. Where is it showing up in your client practice? That's what we're going to look at next week. When we can understand and untangle from this, it means we minimize entanglement with our clients, right? It means that whatever worries, doubts, and fears that you've got, that's your thing, when that shows up in a client, if you've already kind of worked through that or you've got a place to work through that, it means you're less likely to get entangled with your client, way more likely to be effective as a coach. Yeah. It means that you're going to show up to your work embodying self-belief, like living from there, where self-belief, self-trust, self-acceptance, and self-worth are the kind of, you know, these are the resources that you have available to you in your work. So it's no longer like this is a thing I learned about. It's, this is how I live now. It's where this is where I operate from. So this is the combination, the coherence that we get embodying self-belief is when our beliefs and our emotions and our behavior all line up. Right. So if you believe, people value my work and you feel really excited to share that, then you're going to go out and share it in an excited way. And it means that you're likely to attract people who are excited by your work and value your work. And so it becomes this lovely self-fulfilling thing. If one of these things isn't in train, isn't lined up, this is where you get the incoherence, right? Usually it's because the belief is different. It's like, okay, I'm going to white knuckle my way through selling this thing, but I'm doing it in a way that's kind of apologetic because I feel a bit like, I'm unsure or uncertain, or I'm not completely sold on what I'm doing. Because my belief is I'm not sure if people want this. So you can see, right, that people will sense all of that. And so it's like the vibes are off, you know. So even if we say, I really want this, I really want to attract, you know, 6 new clients, I'm super excited to, you know, get my practice up and running, or, you know, sign these folks up for the rest of, you know, this quarter, 2023, have a nice healthy bank account by Christmas. We can want that, but what you believe about it, how you feel about it, and what you do about it, that's what's going to determine what happens. Yeah, make sense? So when this is embodied, it's because these things are coherent. So if you are finding that you're getting results in your business, that you are feeling like, this does not compute, the first thing to do, rather than blame the economy, because that is totally a valid thing, but having been gainfully employed and earned relatively similar amounts of money for 12 years through now two recessions, and do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like we can convince ourselves that that's the reason, rather than look at our beliefs and emotions and behavior. So this is the first place to go, I'm in control of some stuff here. I can impact some things here. Yeah. So I just want to check in with you guys around how that feels to you. Because sometimes it's like, oh God, it's all on me. I'm not sure I like that, right? Or I'm not sure that this is a thing that I'm up for. So let's kind of get a sense of how you're feeling around this. Feel free to share. Where do you notice? Hey Jane, nice to see you. Hi Jane. Anko, go for it.
I just said hi to Zay, but I'm also okay talking. I'm totally with you on that. Like I did my first blog 2015, and I have done the whole thing with blogging for years, and I had online courses and I sold them, and the whole time I took lots of courses about it. The whole time I was always like, ooh, but keep it under your own control. Who knows what happens if I never did it under my domain name. But I have now my domain name since 2 years or so, and I didn't do much there. I used it now for writing because I'm a writer. Like in Germany, like that felt safe because I'm in a tax category writer. So I'm like, nobody can doubt that anymore. But yes, like standing for just me doing something as me. Oh my God, what if I have a bad day? Oh my God, what if somebody doesn't like it? Then I need to hide under a stone. That kind of whole feeling is for me around it too. So yeah, I'm totally the person.
Well, and you know, most of us come to this work post another career or other jobs. It's not usually your first job. And so we've often worked under the guise of an organization. So when you're then standing on your own two feet, it's like, what? This feels really exposing, right? It's completely natural to want to divert into, well, I'm not a coach, I'm a writer. Or, you know, I don't use my own domain name. I use something else because it's a bit safer, whatever. And just to say, there's no right answer here. Just love your reason. Love your reason. Right, if your reason for choosing, so you'll notice my website is under the domain name of selfbelief.school. I love the reason for that, right? Because that's who it's for, people who want to learn about self-belief. But I also loved the reason where I chose my name, right? So this is the thing, is when you're coming into making choices about your coaching business and how you're showing up to it, do you love your reason? Is it kind of like shame-free risk? You know, there's no risk ickiness there. It's like, yeah, I'm super happy to explain why I made this choice. It's clean, right? There's a coherence between my beliefs, my emotions, and my behavior. Right. Let's do a little bit of reflection just for a few moments. I want to share this with you because if you've ever worked with a business coach or been on the internet for 5 minutes, you'll see that everyone complicates running a business like up the wazoo. But actually, and I can say this as someone who worked with lots of very large businesses going through quite risky change for 15 years before I became a coach, every single business has six things that they do. They plan, they create, they market, they sell, they deliver, and they reward. That's it. That's what every single business on the planet does. They all do it in different ways, but our businesses do this, and Amazon does this. They all do it in different ways. Some of them are ethically questionable. Some of them are much bigger. Some of them smaller. Some of them the same size. But I want you to just think about your business. Where does, in these six places, where does your protector show up the most? Like, just notice that for yourself. It may be freaking everywhere, right? But where does your self-doubt show up? Where are you protecting yourself? Just feel free to unmute and share. That would be ace.
Yeah, I found this quite interesting to kind of pinpoint it, and I can tell that mine is at planning, which links to the kind of bystander as well. And selling.
Do you have an idea of why that happens, Hannah? Like, is there a kind of when you think about doing those things, what comes up for you?
I think it's like wanting to, I think with the planning, it's like, oh, I want to do it right, especially all the business stuff. Like, oh, what's the right channel or the right, do I know my messaging and like, who am I speaking to? And, you know, like there is so much to think about.
Yeah.
So you kind of want to make sure your efforts aren't wasted, I guess. That's like the narrative in my head.
Yeah.
And then the selling, I don't know. I just think I haven't done it much. So it just doesn't feel super comfortable. Like I haven't found my way of maybe, I mean, I do sell, but like, I just don't do it enough. Whenever I do so, I'm like, oh, then people buy stuff. That's quite an obvious relationship there, like a shocker. when I do that, people buy stuff. But yeah, that always seems to be one that I look for.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And would you say, Hannah, you identify with the bystander and the critic?
Do you know what's interesting? I definitely relate to the bystander because I just love thinking about stuff, and I love, because I do love like strategy and, you know, that's my personality. Like I know people are saying it's not personality type, but a personality type quizzes are like, you're the strategist person.
Right.
So yeah, that's like how my brain likes to chew things over anyway. And then I never really related to being like a perfectionist, but it's really interesting actually, because when I think about this, there's lots of things where I'm happy to take messy action. I'm happy for it to not be perfect, which is kind of like what I was thought that meant. But then if I think about it, like my standards of like what I'm like, I want the perfect funnel, I want an 8-step email sequence, I'm like, I really want everything to be like super slick.
Yeah.
So yeah,
because what will that mean?
I mean, I'm like professional,
right?
But like I can have a good like a business, and
and I would offer this, it sounds like there's something that feels safe if you're seen as professional.
Yeah, or I just feel safer maybe just having, yeah, feeling like I have like a proper business or, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So cool. I bet people, others relate to that approach? Yeah. Amazing. Thanks, Hannah. That's really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else want to share? Like, where does your protector show up in your business? What happens? Jump on in. Tell us all about it. Hey, Jane.
Good morning. I'm sorry I'm late this morning. I had to whiz to the hospital and back. I thought I'd miss it entirely, but it's actually quick and I'm here. Hey.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
Yeah, I found this a really super straightforward, simple and incredibly helpful exercise to do. It just made perfect sense. And it was no surprise that a lot of self-doubt showed up in planning by over-planning. And if I think, yeah, over planning, like Gantt charts, programs, forecasts, a zillion different ways to plan and forecast and control. And I can understand that in relation to self-doubt, and my healthy adult self had quite a lot to say. But I was interested to see it shows up in create as well, because I always think I love that bit of it. I love putting together programs and courses. And but what I found in create was I was over delivering. I was trying to put everything in order to not disappoint anyone, in order to deliver value for money. And so my healthy adult self knew very well that less is more, which is something I've been telling myself for a long time. So it was really interesting to see that. And then again, what surprised me was in the marketing, because I don't love marketing, but I've worked in PR in the past and I understand it and I feel reasonably comfortable with it. I know visibility can be a problem for me, but again, the question of money came up under marketing. So I had no problem at all about the protector didn't seem at all triggered really by visibility or by, you know, outlining the benefits or case studies or stories. But the thing that was really triggering was, again, about price and about being. And so it comes back to self-worth. And and about the cost of something, what I'm charging, people judging me for having an inflated sense of my self-worth. Yeah. And I felt acute shame at the idea that I might overcharge and be judged for that. So again, that conversation between a healthy adult and the protector around pricing, it doesn't take it away, but it does bring it out into the light.
Yeah, love that. It's such a generous share. And I think this is the thing that happens is you start to see these themes, right? Like this connection to self-worth and to, you know, other people's opinions. It's like, oh, how interesting, right? This is something to pay attention to get a sense of where might I be holding myself back? Why might that be true? How does that show up then when I'm taking action in any of these places? So think of those, thinking about those things, right? What we've talked about, I think you might have missed that slightly, Jane, but we just started off by talking about this idea of embodying self-belief as a business owner, and that it's about the coherence between our beliefs, emotions, and behavior. So if that gets interrupted or is kind of messy or a bit mucky in some way, it doesn't feel clean, then it's likely that we've got some kind of thing showing up there. So it sounds like, yeah, when you're pricing something, stuff comes up, and then there's some things to work through. Yeah.
And what was interesting too is that I didn't spend so much time writing about sell, deliver, and reward, but when I got to sell, I thought I kind of, because I'd worked out the other things in my head, sell didn't feel uncomfortable because I thought selling is really just helping someone decide if this is right for them, if they've got certain things that are holding them back. You know, it's not about pushing. It's a bit like coaching. It's a bit like an opening a space so they can see clearly if they want to do it. Yeah.
How are you at rewarding yourself?
I don't know. I didn't get to that one.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Because there is often like a little, you know, it'll show up and it'll be the same thing that shows up in different bits. You know,
yeah.
Places. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Jane. Really cool. Cassie, it's create, not marketing and selling. How interesting. Why do you think that is?
I think just listening to what Hannah was saying, I think I automatically went to market and sell, but then when I reflect on it now, it's actually once I've got that piece of information, I'm quite happy to put it out there. But it's getting to the part where I have the piece of information. So it's, yeah, and I think it's what holds me up is do I know what I want to say? Is it right? And I think, again, you know, I wouldn't have thought I was a perfectionist in any way, but I think I'm learning that there are some tendencies there that where I am coming up with 9 different versions of something and not being able to choose which one is the right one.
Well, and it's that, to me, it's that critic protector. It's like, oh, it's not quite good enough, so then there's increased risk, right? Yeah. But then we don't ever feel safe by you can't do enough for it to feel safe to share it, no. And you won't ever get it right because that's not the purpose of it, right? Yeah. Interesting.
And I think, and I was Hannah's on my pod with me, and we were talking about this last week. And I think while it's like while I'm getting myself to the point of creating, I'm completely in scapegoat, and then the critic kicks in once I'm actually finally got myself to start creating something. then the other one kind of comes and pokes its head up.
Yeah, fascinating how they team up, right? Mm-hmm. They team up and it's all to try and hold you back.
Yeah,
that's the only safe place. So we're and this is why I think it's so helpful to play with this and understand this for yourself as you start to see, where might my clients mirror that to me and I get entangled with them? Right? Might not be specific, the same thing. They may not be business owners. They may not be coaches that are your clients. But where might my clients be mirroring what I'm concerned about? And then I get stuck too because I haven't thought about this myself. Right? That's the real kind of, I guess, the unintended benefit of looking at this stuff. is that you then get to feel like, oh, it doesn't actually matter what my clients bring. I'll probably be able to be with that. Yeah. And that's going to increase your sense of self-belief in your work, which has a knock-on effect to everything. Yeah. So this is a really, this is a really great, great conversation to have in your pods. Where is your protector showing up in your business? What options do you have? What does your healthy adult self want to offer you around this? You know, how can you play with this? And there's two ways to look at how our protectors will show up, right? And I just want to bring this up because I think this is actually one of the most helpful questions you can ask yourself as a business owner. Is this a business problem or is it a protective belief? Right, so a business problem can be solved. It usually needs us to do something different, but you can learn it, you can outsource it, you can usually Google the answer. Right, so I need a way to take payment from clients. I need an onboarding process when someone signs up to work with me. Right, I need to do something. There may be some, you know, like protective stuff that comes up around that because it's like, whoa, that's the thing I need to sort out. Right, I need to ask people if they want to work with me. I can probably get a script for sales that I can adapt and, you know, figure out all of those things. So business problems can be solved because they are problems that have been worked out. You just need some new or better information. And you can learn it and you can usually outsource it. Right? So that's great. Business problems are cracker. We love those. Protective beliefs, on the other hand, are a little trickier because these can only be healed by you. You can't outsource a protective belief. They require us to be different. Right? Usually we need to believe something new. And we move through them with experiments. So even if you have a person who is a sales, like some coaches, bigger coaches, will employ salespeople to sell their stuff. So if someone is interested in working with this coach, they'll get to speak to a salesperson who'll sell in the course or the service. And even if this person is incredibly competent, your belief about that process will determine the success of it, right? So you can't outsource the thing to the salesperson. You have to embody it yourself and then manage that person, right? So the things that come up as protective beliefs, I've got a script for my introductory calls or my sales calls, but I can't ever seem to ask someone if they actually want to buy from me. Right? Or I go to post about my coaching work on social media, but then I end up kind of being a bit apologetic and I don't draw people's attention to it. I don't really respond to comments. I kind of go invisible. Right? I haven't told anyone in my network that I'm a coach now. It's a big one. Big one. The problem that happens is that we treat a protective belief as if it's a business problem. Right? I've got all these beliefs about my work, about coaching, about my clients. So what I need to do is go get a business coach and they can tell me what to do. Or what I need is I need someone to tell me how to do sales. I need someone to tell me what the perfect planner is to use. It's quite funny, just as an aside, I quite like planning tools and things like that. Like I'm all right with that. It's kind of cool to have a you know, written down what your week plan looks like. The most comments I've ever got on Instagram stories has been when I post about a planner. They're like, oh my God, where did you get that? And I will then share the link and say, just remember, the planner does not make the plan happen. right? Because that's the thing that we think, right? If I have the perfect notebook and the perfect plan or this particular app, this bit of tech, that will sort me out. That will be the thing. So much market research, Cassie. I love it. Yeah. And it's just useful to notice, yeah, where did you get your planner? Amazon. Yeah. The big evil Amazon. So yeah, it's like when you kind of notice that you're looking for a solution that doesn't involve anything from you, it's probably a protective belief that's underneath everything. That's worth looking at, right? That's worth looking at. So some things that happen, like protective beliefs that I've seen that are super common, are things like this. And how this leads to behavior change that may not be necessary, right? Not enough people liked my post or are liking my post. I should totally change my coaching business. If I don't sell out my program, then I failed. Someone said no on an introductory call because she didn't like me. I'm working so hard, I deserve more clients. Really, really common, slightly icky feeling protective beliefs that come up. I've definitely felt and believed all of these myself from time to time. I'm curious for you, where does your protector, like what's the beliefs that your protector offers you around your business? What are the beliefs that you've noticed yourself believing when you think about that business cycle? Just share that again. What is it that your protector is offering you? If this, then that means what? You may want to take a moment just to sort of write down anything. Well, yeah, Anka, you want to share? Go for it.
And what I notice most often is that I, especially with the coaching business, that I worry that I can't work enough as a coach to make enough money to live. Like it would have to be so, like I have to pump out sessions and then it's, oh, then I'm just tired. So I like to do it on the side, but not as the main thing. So I don't know if it's more a protective belief or if it's more a healthy idea. I'm not sure, but that's more the main thing for me.
Yeah. So Anka, tell me about where that belief comes from. Like how did you come to that conclusion?
Like when I calculate the costs of self-employment in Germany, then I might keep not more than half of what I have as an income for me. The rest goes all over all kinds of different things. Germany is horrible for self-employment for many things, including coaching. And if as a nurse, I make about 2,000 a month, and then I would have to make 4,000 with coaching sessions. And if I'm like, no, I don't want to do so many sessions, and I would have to scramble much more to get enough clients for paid sessions, that I'm like, that's even more time. And then that's kind of the fear of overworking or like being forced to work more than I want. Like control of my time is out of my hands, so that then I don't want to do it.
Right. So this is the thing, right? And this is what I mean by there's no right answer, but love your reason, right? Because that's embodied self-belief. Is do you love your reasons for having your coaching as a second job to your nursing career?
I didn't understand that. The reasons where I have it as a second job?
an adjunct to your nursing career.
So that I don't do it mainly because I want to protect my time and my energy.
Right. And do that, you love that reason?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. See, notice how clean that feels.
Yes.
In comparison to at any other conclusion you could draw from that, i.e. I'm not hustling hard enough or whatever, something like that. You know, if I really wanted this, then I would do this and this and this, whatever.
So then you said the thing, if I really truly love the reason, then it's from the healthy self.
Yeah.
I see. Oh, that's a good way to think about it. Thank you.
Yeah. Like, and this is the thing, like sometimes it, so, and I just want to share like how this can get a little sneaky and we can get entangled, right? If we're super amped about our own businesses and like, this is the way forward, everyone should be self-employed. And then you get a client who's struggling a bit in their business and they've come to you for support. And you're like, well, you just don't want this enough, right? You're entangled because you're making your judgment their reality, right? But from their healthy adult self, they might be like, you know what? I love having a small business. This feels so good to me. I love protecting my time and my energy. It's all good. Then it's from their healthy adult self. As a self-belief coach, we're like, you're golden. How do we, what do you want to, you know, what do you want to work on, right? So notice, if you, when you love your reasons, it's usually because it's come from a really value-led place. It's come from your healthy adult self. It's clean. There's no questioning of it. And you may go through seasons in your business, right, where you're like, oh, this is perfect. I've got the right amount of clients. I'm doing work that I love. And I feel really good in my life. Therefore, there's no reason for me to grow anymore. Like I can just ignore, you know, the rest of the world that's telling me that bigger is better. I'm good. Right? That's a business that's got your healthy adult self running it. Right? And sometimes we can work with folks if they're business owners who will be judging or comparing where they're at with someone else's value system when actually they don't want that anyway, right? So our job is to remind them of that. But where, so that was a sort of slightly different example, because that's where your healthy adult self is in charge. Who, does anyone want to share around where they can see their protector is in charge and is offering them some beliefs around that? Yeah, Hannah.
Yeah, I was thinking about what I said earlier.
Yeah.
And I think the planning part is quite clear. I have a belief that there's some right solution and then have a belief that, well, I can make it work, whatever platform or whatever model or whatever, like I trust that I'm capable. And then the selling one, I was like trying to think, and I think there might be some sort of unconscious thing about like not wanting to be responsible for people. Like if I'm selling and saying like, this is good, this thing is really good, like I can help you with this, it's like, ugh, then I'm like responsible for them. Yeah. And my coaching is, well, I'm sort of merging financial education with coaching, so helping women with wealth. So I think maybe there's some responsibility. It's, yeah, sometimes a bit tangible in terms of that stuff, if that makes sense.
So what I'm hearing you say just on this part of it is when a client signs up for me, I make it mean I'm responsible for them.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Interesting. Say more about that. What do you think that's about?
I don't know if it's like the process of selling. Like maybe I can find a different way, but of being like, this is, I feel like when you're selling, you're saying like, this is something that I believe is really helpful and I stand behind. Could be, obviously it's up to you if you think it's a good solution for you, but that's kind of, so then if you're like saying that, I feel like you're like maybe promising. Yeah, you're kind of saying like, this is what I can deliver to you. And I think there's something around that. I'm not sure exactly how it's all forming, but I think that might be the,
yeah.
Yeah.
So there is some sort of amorphousness, but some thoughts around, if I say this is what I deliver, that people are going to have that expectation of me. That I'm making a promise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does your kind of healthy adult self offer you around that idea? What else could be true around all of this?
Well, I think that everyone's responsible for themselves anyway, and if you relate to them as an adult, it's perfectly capable. And in the past, I found it useful to think, like, even if someone gets a tiny shift from something, it's enough. It doesn't have to be like this huge thing.
And I'm curious to know, like, what is your relationship with responsibility like?
Well, I think I probably get emotional saying I feel like very responsible for people. So I think there's like a thing around that.
It's an interesting, isn't it? Like, there's something that is worthy of your attention here, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what? So there's two things that are going on right now. There's your relationship with responsibility and getting to know that and offering yourself some compassion around that and some understanding around that. And then there is, what do I want to take from that into my business? Right? And at the moment, those two things are like interlinked, right? Got this crunchy relationship with responsibility. I don't feel clean about it. And then it's kind of inside my business and I haven't really drawn it out and had a good look at it. But once you do that, you create some space for yourself, some thinking for yourself around, okay, what do I want to very consciously and intentionally bring into my business so that I can show up for my prospective clients without this kind of crunchy sense of, oh, what am I promising when it comes to responsibility? So that feels a bit cleaner and a bit lighter for you.
Yeah.
And then when people sign up, it's not like, shit, now I'm responsible for you. It's, oh my God, I can't wait to work with you. I'm so excited to see what you make of this. Right? Which means your capacity to work with people, to offer different things, will also expand. Does that make sense, how that sort of works?
Yeah, because I think it's a little bit like murky below the surface. So it's interesting when you have like the frameworks to pinpoint stuff, you're like, because I don't know if I would have got to it otherwise.
So there's something in there around responsibility. And maybe that's related to that sense of, this has to be right. I have to get this perfect, or, you know, some version of perfect. Worth having a little explore.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome, Hannah. Yeah. So great. So great for your clients too, you know? Yeah. Anyone else want to share anything that's coming up as you're thinking about your coaching business? Yeah, Jane.
Hannah, I really feel for you. Thank you for sharing that. And just hearing you and Sass talk, it kind of made quite a few light bulbs go ping, ping, ping for me. Not so much around responsibility, but maybe for me around self-worth and how that shows up. And Sass, when you were saying about, you know, maybe that's something, so I talk for me, not for you, Hannah, but you know, maybe if self-worth is something that I want to look at for me, then if I do that, it will show up in my business. It will change the way I approach what I offer over delivery, pricing, all that kind of stuff in my business. So I kind of went, oh, now I understand all those social media posts when people say running your own business is like the biggest self-development program in the world, which I'd always thought, man, I don't know about that. But suddenly I was like, oh, God, yeah, OK, I see that. But perhaps more importantly, I'm thinking about the importance of role modeling and how we actually learn more from the way the people around us behave than we do from what they say. Yeah. And so actually, I think self-worth is the thing that, you know, is at the heart of what I want to help people in my sector manage. Beautiful. Deal with, address. So yeah, and Hannah, I was thinking, you said you're working with clients around finance and wealth, and the word that goes the word that springs to mind around that is responsibility as well. So it's interesting. I think it feels to me like there's a link between the issues we're working with and the niches that perhaps we're interested in. It's all probably what I've said, everything's so obvious. You just have to be going, yeah, yeah.
No, I love that you're making these connections. And that's exactly it, Jane, is the thing that I think, unless we're willing to look at the bits that make us feel really uncomfortable, what happens is that just gets projected into your work.
Mm.
Right. So for someone who, I'm just going to go with that martyring kind of protective pattern, right? Which I just want to give an example of this. Huge for us in the helping professions, over delivering, self-sacrifice, all of that shiz, that when we don't get clean about that and understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we can notice when we're moving into an unhealthy response to our people, we then make them responsible for fulfilling that protective need, right? Because the martyr is all about, I need to be needed. So we then give that responsibility to our clients. When it comes to, you know, the critic and being the protective pattern of the critic, which is all about being good enough, we then give that to our clients and say, you make me feel like I'm good enough. Tell me that I'm good enough. We do it in lots of subtle ways, right? So the thing to just notice is that none of this is benign, right? Like, it will show up whether we like it or not. So that connection you're making, Jane, oh, this is a big development thing. It really is. But a lot of us will paper over the cracks and go, yeah, but if I had a planner, if I just had the planner, right? When actually, it's actually about something a bit richer and deeper and more uncomfortable than that. And this is the kind of thing that is ripe for supervision. You start to notice these patterns. Ah, here's where I'm giving my clients an unintended responsibility because I'm not doing that work myself. That's ideal for a conversation with a supervisor. Okay. And just know that you'll have that support after we finish the SBCA curriculum. You get 6 months of supervision with me. So, you know, that's all part of it, because this is real, you know, this is real stuff. And you may find that for 80% of your clients it's like everything's groovy, and then there'll be someone that pops up and you're like, I am so entangled with this person, and I don't, there's something about them that I'm not okay with, or doesn't feel good, or whatever, and it's you know, getting me activated, and I don't feel great about it. And usually lots of folks will just kind of ignore it or push it away or decide that that is a problematic client, rather than go, where's my responsibility in all of this? There's that word again, Hannah. Yeah, what am I accountable for here? So every time you're willing to go, this is my stuff here, right? This is my stuff. Then you start to do this work where you're uncoupling or decoupling your stuff from the client stuff. It won't show up in your business in the same way. Yeah. Self-worth is massive. And the thing is that I love about this is that we end up having our clients mirror stuff back to us anyway. Like you're saying, Jane, self-worth is the thing that you're sort of feeling a bit sticky about, and that's the thing you want to help your clients with the most. Yeah. For my whole life, self-doubt was my thing. And I did all the dances to try and avoid having to be with it until I could. And, you know, Hannah, this idea of responsibility, I imagine that is a huge barrier for folks when it comes to money, right? When it comes to educating themselves financially and feeling like they are in charge, it is a responsibility, and there'll be a resistance to that. So as you get clean around it, your relationship with it, then you can offer that to your clients as well. So, you know, to me, it just feels like it's a sort of the law of reciprocity in some ways. Yeah, Anke.
I have this thing with responsibility too, like very bad, like my whole life already. And what helped me, especially also in nursing, you know, like there's high responsibility, like alone out there. I find anything in the houses when I get in there. So I had years of learning and learning with this. And once a colleague said, like she was from a Christian family, and she said, and it totally shocked me, she said, "I trust God to only send me to the patient because I am the right one to be there." And so what over the years, what my mind made out of it, I'm not so much into Christianity, but was like, I trust the process. Like if I am meeting this person in this, if they chose me to work with me, then in our interaction will come something naturally. It is part of my training and my experience, but also it is part of the interaction that I can trust that will come into existence between us, that I don't have to fabricate or make, which helped me so much to lessen my stress of responsibility and be more curious about what is coming up in the moment and what is coming up in me, like as maybe also criticism, but also as an option or as an intuition, and to offer that. And then I've seen it play out so many times in such a magical way that then that helped me to overcome my fear. But I have it every single session again. But I always have to, again, do my own work with it. And that, I think, invites the other person also to engage on their side energetically in some way. I don't know if this helps, but it helped me.
Yeah, thanks, Anke. I do think that we can trust the healthy adult self of our client. Something in them has brought them to us. And then we show up and we see what happens. The cleaner we show up, the more in alignment we are with our own healthy adult self, the higher the chances are that the client is going to feel safe enough to do whatever they came for. And, you know, one of the things I would just offer, Anke, is, you know, that we often, because we're an optimistic bunch, right? We believe in the, you know, never-ending power of, like, redemption and change in humans. Is sometimes our clients will trigger us, activate us in a way that feels really uncomfortable, where we're like, I don't know why the hell you're in my coaching conversation, because you seem to want to project all the stuff you don't like onto me. Like there's something going on here that does not feel magical, right? It's very not magical. And it's the cleaner we are, and able to see beyond that into what might be going on for that person, the easier it is going to be for us to stay in that healthy adult place, right? And I'm just thinking about this. We'll talk more about this when it comes to our coaching clients next week. But if you think about your business work or your coaching business work as encompassing everyone who is not yet a paying client, right? So these are the folks that you're going to get on social media or responding to newsletters or, you know, connecting to you in some way. Is sometimes there is that projection of, you know, they want to argue, they want to fight, they want to challenge, and we can expel an entire, you know, a lot of energy on trying to make that right. And we worry about those opinions and those judgments and conflicts. And the more that you are kind of able to be okay with how you respond in those circumstances, the less drama you'll create in your own mind around how you need to solve for everybody. And sometimes that is the most compassionate thing, is just to ignore or to, you know, respond and let them have their thing without engaging, you know. So all to say that we can't control how anyone else experiences us, But what we can do is do the work to minimize the ways that we get entangled with our clients' own stuff by attending to the stuff that gets activated by them. And so noticing this in a preemptive way is great, but it will also come up during. You can't be prepared, you know, for the lunacy of stuff that can sometimes get thrown your way, right? You can't prepare for that. But 99% of the stuff we deal with, I think, is doable, right? We are dealing with, you know, pretty emotionally sound, thoughtful humans, so we can expect that kind of experience. Anyone else want to share anything that's coming up around what their protectors are offering them in their business? What's this showing up for you, Cassie? I'm curious to know.
I think as an overall, it's a, like there's a strong martyr,
yeah,
of that wanting to be needed. Therefore, if I get, if there's no traction and I don't end up with working with people, then what does that mean? And I think that does come back, because I've said before, my experience of working in hospitality, suddenly you are needed, and you're, you know, especially if you're running the restaurant, you're kind of the trainer, everybody's looking to you for advice or guidance, or you're orchestrating that thing. So yeah, I think that's that.
Yeah.
That as an overarching, I think it is the martyr. And reflecting on when you were talking, I think the deliver popped up for me in terms of, oh, well, in the moment, am I doing the right? Am I giving enough for this client? Are they enjoying the experience? Are they going to go away and feel like, yeah, that was worth it?
Right, interesting. So what I'm hearing is if clients sign up for me, then I'll know I'm needed.
Yeah.
Interesting belief, right?
Yeah.
If a client walks away from a session and they enjoy it and they're excited, then I'll know I'm needed.
Yeah.
So that's just interesting to notice. That's the kind of belief structure we've got here in this protective kind of dynamic, right? Because then if you believe those things, you're giving that responsibility to the client, right? You sign up with me and you go away excited, and then I can feel needed.
Yeah.
That's how this is really working out.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so
there's also something around, I can't ask, I need to be asked.
Yeah.
Well, I've got super excited about it. Like, you know, somebody, a friend of a friend of a friend is then, and then I'm like, oh, you found me. Oh, that feels way more self-worthy. Like, way more confidence boosting than somebody replying to a post that I've put out there.
Yeah interesting, because you've fired yourself from the job of selling to your clients or marketing to your clients, right? You're like, no, you need to do that work.
Yeah,
because your job is to make me feel needed.
Yeah, which is then why I think then I struggle with create, because I'm like, well, I don't know how to word it, because
yeah,
I want somebody else to tell me how I should word it. How do you want me to word it?
Yeah. Well, it's not your job to create, right? That has to happen magically so that people come to you, so then you can feel needed.
Yeah.
So then the work becomes something around, how do you create a sense of you needing to do this regardless?
Yeah.
Right? Because when you can decouple that need to be needed from anything your clients do or don't do, you'll be free.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
Yeah. Then it's like, well, if my client signs up or not, I still need to do this work because I love it. I want, yeah. It's connected to my values. It's, you know, it's who I am. It's what I'm, you know, what I love to do, right?
It's making me think again about a hospitality analogy. Like, if I was going to open something myself, I would open it and then let the customers come.
Yeah.
You know, I would create something that I loved, that I felt good about in terms of the menu, the service, the ambient, all of that. And then I would just be like, okay, open the door and see if you come. Rather than going and doing all this market research or whatever it might be and trying to create something for what
I think. Yeah, or just telling your clients, your prospective clients, that you're open for business. Because in my experience, cafes, food trucks, restaurants still advertise. And yes, word of mouth may bring you some clients, right? But yeah, you still have to build the restaurant.
Yeah.
Great point, Jane. So, and that can be the perfect first step, right? Is can you create something that you would love? Because as soon as you let go of your clients needing to need you, I mean, I don't know even if you can imagine that and just go, whatever my clients do, I believe in me.
Yeah, and I think it would be interesting when it comes to if I find, you know, when I get that first paying client that isn't somebody I know. Because the people I have had have been people I have maybe had interactions with in the past or have certainly know of me.
That's so where all of our
clients come from. Even more of that I need to be needed because they know of me in a previous life or whatever. Whereas, it would be interesting to see how that then plays out when it's somebody that has no idea about who I am or whatever.
Well, and you know, create that bridge, right? Mm-hmm. So your job is to build the bridge then. How do those people walk towards you, right? Yeah. Then it means, because this is where all of our clients come from, is from our networks.
Yeah.
It's where our first clients come from. And then as our networks grow, then that's we get more clients, right? And word of mouth from a past client to a new client is the best kind of referral, right? So I wouldn't poo-poo that or make it seem like it's not real clients, right?
No, I just mean that they, even though it was a word of mouth from a client, that was somebody I'd worked with, but then they passed it on to somebody else I'd worked with, which is obviously how it grows. And, you know, eventually that will get to somebody that I've not worked with.
And it may be that a more helpful belief is something like, it is none of my business where my clients come from or what they do or don't do. I still believe in this. I believe in my work.
Yeah.
There's something about like really kind of throwing that, just, you know, offering that up. None of my business. Don't even care where they come from, what they decide to do or not do, if they need me or not, if they walk away from a session feeling upbeat or down low, none of my business. I'm just going to show up, build my restaurant, which is a metaphor for the coaching business in case I wasn't clear. And, you know, that's going to reflect who I am, and that will, and I'll just keep telling people about that and they will come.
Yeah.
That's where the Field of Dreams thing got it slightly wrong. You have to do more than build it for them to come. You have to tell people about it. Amazing. But if I was you, Cassie, I would be looking at that belief buster process around how can I create some really helpful beliefs for myself as I'm creating, as I'm marketing, as I'm selling, just to get those first few clients in so that you get the experience of, you know, seeing that happen a few times. It's all experimenting.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing. Brilliant. Yeah, Anke.
I just had another thought about this needing to be needed, which was very much my thing too, which also as a nurse, I love this because it's not about me, it's about the nursing they need. I am just the replaceable person coming, everybody else is coming also there. And in coaching, for me in the beginning, I had very much this thing that my self-worth was very much entangled with how the session went. And if the people had a smiling face afterwards, or if they were like, kind of like, "Ooh, well, that is what coaching is," I don't know. And then I felt bad myself. And so what helped me a lot was doing a lot of free session or bartering session with people I knew, you know, kind of that was more trusting. I more know that I had much more positive experiences of what coaching is. And so then I very slowly helped me to untangle myself from the coaching. So basically now I always try to go, like, I'm just the one who's on the side, but what it's about is their relationship to the method of coaching, to the power of coaching, not to the power of Anka that day. And so that also was kind of a little bit of a distance between my self-worth and the result. And there were really sessions where I said, this is not what coaching is for, what they wanted. They wanted whatever, cuddling or like me solving their problems or whatever. But that's not what coaching, or they wanted therapy. But that's not what coaching is for. So it's, again, even in my mind, it was clear if it didn't go as well as they wanted, it was not because of me, but it was because of they look for something else, and I can refer them to what they, and I did. And then they were maybe happy, but it gave me some steps in between to do some coaching, get some positive and negative experiences, and then also entangle more and more myself from it, especially as I did it with people who didn't pay me $100 or something for it. So that was easier.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Like, is this about the coaching or is it about the coach? And I would argue it's both. That, yes, you can trust the process, but not everyone creates an equal process, right? So your presence, you and your specific expression of the universe as you is necessary for whatever's going to happen. So yeah, but it's an interesting thing to play with, right? Like, it's complex. Is it me? Is it the coaching? Is it this tool that I'm offering? I would say it's a mix of all of those things, you know. And if the client doesn't get what they came for, sometimes that is because of us, right? So that's the added bit of complexity, right? Sometimes it's because we've held back. We haven't done the brave thing. Or we've gone in and tried to solve the problem and they're feeling dissatisfied around that. So we have to be open to the idea of sometimes it is us that causes the problem or the tension or the dissatisfaction, right? That's okay, right? It's more about what is it that is here? And what is it that I can influence? What's my work? What's the client's work? How do we have a conversation about that? I mean, I think, Jane, I get your point, that it's you as the coach, not you as you. The two are linked, but perhaps helpful to separate the whole self identity and worth from identity as a coach. Yeah, I think that's really hard to do. I don't know if anyone's found an ability to split themselves. So, well, this is me as a coach. This is me as a human. Like, I think you're you and there's coaching work you do. So it's more, I think, about and this is my point here, is that when we can recognize that as practitioners, we are not immune to self-doubt, that it's a very natural human experience, we're going to have it too. When we're willing to look at that and notice it and explore it and see where it may be showing up for our clients in our businesses before we work with people or in the, you know, the surrounding systems and processes and branding around the coaching work itself from this conversation this morning. And next week when we look at our relationship with clients, when we can see where our own self-doubt is showing up in our businesses and we're willing to explore that, our chances of minimizing entanglement with clients is greatly enhanced. This is not about being perfect. It's not about being a kind of moist robot AI coach who only ever gives perfect pet answers, right? We're still human. But the idea is that as you minimize your entanglements with your clients, as you recognize where your own stuff may be showing up and your own unhelpful or unhealthy needs that are protecting you from something, when they're showing up, if you can be with that and play with the meanings that you may be making from that, get support to do that, either in supervision or in some other form, then you are less likely to get entangled with a client. You're more likely to stay within a pretty ethical boundary of coaching. And it means that the work we do is going to be of greater service to the client. It won't always work, right? But it will be of greater service. And that's, you know, that's kind of good enough coaching. That's all good. There is a kind of prevailing belief out there on Planet Coach that every session is life-changing and it's all tied up in a nice, neat bow. And that's just good marketing from coaches who only share their very best testimonials of a moment in time when someone was quite excited. And that's fine, but let's not forget that the reality here is that we're just showing up and we are looking at, you know, what's the client offering us? Where might we be getting in the way there? Yeah. Cool. That's a great reference. Jane, couples therapy. Great show. In a therapeutic realm, very different. But yes, but a good idea of how that gets served and the supervision process around it as well. Yeah. So the invitation for you is to just notice in your coaching business, in those six things of plan, create, market, sell, deliver, reward, where is your self-doubt showing up? What's it telling you? What's it offering you? How is it holding you back? Do you love your reasons for agreeing with it? And if you don't, how can you look at this? Knowing what you know now around the root causes of your self-doubt, of the beliefs that that creates, and how you can experiment to untangle from those beliefs. You know, what might need to change for you to feel freer and less bound by those protective beliefs? You know, where are you deciding that it's a business problem, right, and distracting yourself with planners and apps and the like processes? So please do take these ideas and themes and thoughts into your pods for conversations. Lots of folks say, oh, this really starts to shift the relationship in the pods as well, because you start to like, well, okay, this is where it's coming up for me. And it starts to, you know, we start to share real stuff, which is great. And then as we move through and look at client stuff, we'll talk more about you know, self-reflection and how that can really help you with your actual client works and the kind of ethics of that as well. Yeah. Any final shares or thoughts or comments from anyone? All good. Well, enjoy your week, and I'll see you next week for our second call, module 7. All right, loves. Take care. Thank you. Bye.